Cuban Americans are gathering here at the Union of Cuban Ex-Political Prisoners, where the walls are lined with pictures of people killed during Fidel Castro's rule.
This is my friend. This was my friend. I know him here, yeah, because I've been in so many prisons.
It doesn't change the realities for the Cuban people. It doesn't change the realities of thousands who were tortured and jailed and who died.
I've never wanted to be back because of the dictatorship.
I feel so happy after being 19 years in jail.
I thought that the day that this would happen, I'd be joyous and celebrating, but I can't because I don't want to celebrate a guy's death. But at the same time, I'm not lamenting for it.
I do plan on returning in the future. As far as involvement, now is the time, and it's definitely in the hands of the young people to take it over.
After this, Cuba have freedom for everybody, combat to Cuba.
It's not equivalent to liberty, but it's a step towards liberty.
Voices there over the weekend talking about the death of longtime Cuban leader Fidel Castro. Today is also a historic day for the U.S. and Cuba, the first commercial flight in decades between New York's JFK Airport and Havana. And it comes just as Cubans mark a 9-day mourning period for Castro, who died at 90 on Friday. Castro has been on the scene since 1959. Still, he leaves one of the world's most indelible legacies. To some, a revolutionary, anti-capitalist hero who stood up to president after U.S. president, but also a despot, a dictator who jailed political dissidents, jailed gay people, and presided over economic stagnation in Cuba. Julia Zweig is CBS News Cuba analyst and author of the book Cuba, What Everyone Needs to Know. She says this is a monumental moment for Cuba and its future, the closing of a chapter that began when Castro jumped onto the political stage in his early 20s.
We're talking pretty much 70 years in which this man has played an outsized role in their lives. Now, the generational perspective is different. The older you get in Cuba, the more profound the impact he had. But even within Cuba and outside of Cuba, you know, he reshaped Latin American politics. He had a huge impact on the Cubans who left the island and on those who stayed. So it's a monumental and significant moment.
If you are Cuban and living under what we call the Castro regime, do things change rapidly or at all? There's already a great deal of change happening in Cuba economically and maybe socially. Does this signal more change or is this symbolic, his passing?
Well, I think, of course, it's symbolic, but he's been off the political stage for the better part of 10 years. During that time, as you say, there's been fairly significant change underway, led by his brother Raul. I'm not sure that it portends radical change, however. Cuba moves very cautiously and slowly when it comes to rewriting the social contract, which is what's been happening in the last several years. And now, especially, although the state, the government, the regime, there'll be more pressure on it to deliver opportunity and a better way of life for Cubans, especially for young Cubans, this death takes place against the backdrop of a huge political earthquake in the United States and President-elect Trump indicating, and we don't know yet, that he plans to potentially really overhaul the diplomatic and commercial opening of President Obama. And I think that factor is going to weigh on how rapidly or slowly the reform process advances now post-Fidel.
And when it comes to the United States and the changes happening here, it seems you have these countervailing forces. You have a Republican president-elect who has lots of constituents who want those reforms slowed down or parts of them reversed. You also have a hotel magnate, somebody with a real estate empire, who surely sees opportunity in Cuba or at least appreciates the economic opportunity available to people like him. It's not clear at all what he would really do when it comes to policy with a place that's ripe for such profit.
You're correct. And he had people on the ground looking into that opportunity in the last few years. So it depends which Donald Trump we get and who he appoints and whose influence he takes on or advice he takes on. I'm not so sure. There's one thing you said, Todd, that I think I disagree with, which is the constituents for rolling back the policy that Obama has put into place in the last 2 years are not as broad and deep as the coverage of the last few days suggest. Because what you have is now 80% increase in American travel year on year to Cuba. You have Cuban Americans even those who might be delighted that Fidel is dead, investing in their families' small businesses on the islands, sending $3 to $4 billion in remittances a year. And then you have the hotel, the airline, the agriculture, the cruise industry, the universities, the museums. It is the breadth of engagement plus the government-to-government discussions is much bigger than I would describe as a narrow band, but a very articulate and loud and passionate band of opponents to the policy opening. He would have much more support, Mr. Trump, by recognizing that a year from now, Raul Castro is stepping down, and this potentially gives a Trump administration an opportunity, a choice. Do I want to roll back to the Cold War, pick a fight with a small Caribbean country, and maybe get a couple of points from that and some yayas out? Or do I want to reshape further the relationship with that country? I think we don't know where it's going to go, and despite the material suggestion otherwise.
And what is the plan domestically in Cuba? Raul Castro gives up power, at least he's supposed to, in a year, as you said. He's 85. It's not like he's the baby brother of Fidel Castro. Does it signal the potential for a real policy shift domestically in Cuba? Is there a plan for the post-Castro era there?
Well, there is a plan. I don't know if I would characterize it as a real policy shift. There's a designated successor. He's 56 years old. He's well-liked. He's an engineer by training. He has a lot of government experience outside of the capital, kind of as governor of two different provinces. There are strategic plans in place that the Communist Party has acted upon and endorsed in the last two party congresses, the most recent of which was this year, that still suggest a kind of modestly paced reform process in which you still have state socialism, but you have a market economy in the small business and cooperative sector and the state holding on to the big ticket items, economically speaking. And you have much more, I would say, autonomy from the state for Cubans than ever before, a more open society in terms of dialogue and speech than I've seen in the last 30 years I've been traveling there. But radical change, like if you envision Jimmy Carter going down there and running a multi-party democratic election process and the World Bank and the IMF overhauling the economy and turning it into a capitalist economy, full stop. No, I don't see that at all. It's more of a hybrid that will continue to evolve.
Julia Zweig, CBS News Cuba analyst. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Julia Zweig is author of the book Cuba, What Everyone Needs to Know.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.